and welcome to PodRocket, a web development podcast brought to you by LogRocket. LogRocket helps software teams improve user experience with session replay, error tracking, and product analytics. You can try it free at logrocket.com. I'm Noel, and today we're welcoming back Brad Frost. Brad's a design system consultant, web designer, speaker, writer, etc. He's here to talk about AI and its role with design systems. Welcome to the show, Brad. How's it going?
Hey, thanks, Noel. Thanks for having me back. This is exciting.
Oh, of course, of course. I always look forward to our conversations. You always have lots of interesting stuff to say. So I'm excited to dig in. I have a hunch we're going to like immediately get off the rails, especially because we have this like AI context we're talking about here, but
yep.
That's okay. That's what I'm all about. So I think maybe, I don't know, just to frame this a little bit and put some constraints on this so we aren't just like trying to talk about everything, can we put some bounds on what we're talking about when we're talking about design systems and the parts of it that like AI has a role in?
Yeah, there's many different roles. I'll say that the code side of design systems tends to be further along, I think, than the more sort of visual design aspects of it. A lot of that's due to the nature of kind of the tooling and stuff where you have these LLMs and code is characters and things like that. And so AI is pretty, I think, a little bit more mature in that department, that and documentation, which is also tends to be the language and words and stuff like that, whereas more of the sort of visual design generation and stuff like that, there's obviously a lot of work happening in that arena as well. But we'll say that it's in our own work, that tends to be a little bit more immature as far as, oh, this stuff is ready to go and drop into an enterprise context, and you're going to have AI designing your screens or your product flows or whatever. Just when it comes to code and documentation, those are, I think, the most fertile and immediately applicable areas that we're seeing in our work.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Like my intuition, I feel like I'm about as tuned into the AI stuff as like the next web dev person. I check stuff out. I dip my toes in, play with the new things. I'm like, yeah, this is cool. I use Copilot. It's great. It helps me every so often. But yeah, it does seem like design systems in particular, where we're really like trying to do like the visual side, where it is like design in kind of the oldest sense of the word, right? This kind of like creating a thing that is supposed to look a specific way and behave a specific way. It feels like that's not a realm that prompting models has really got us to yet, or at least not that I've seen. It's hard for me to imagine that being like a super, what do you say, fertile was the word you use there, like kind of paradigm.
It's more in the, I think more of the opportunity in that arena is around composition, is wielding those kind of more atomic components that might be handcrafted, but then it's here's our kit of parts, now do stuff with them, right? Generate me 75 login screens, right? That all use different combinations of things. And I think that's really powerful. And again, we're getting there. I think it's around the corner. It's just, I think, a little less bird in hand right now. Whereas the code stuff, so I think like probably the easiest and most obvious use case for design system code creation is, here's our design system's code base. I would now like you to generate me a new component in that style, right? And we have this working. So at Big Medium, the agency that I help run, we have people, and shout out to Kevin Coyle, who is our kind of resident AI expert, really training these LLMs on a specific code base. And I think that's really important to underscore, is that we're talking about organization specific solutions, right? A lot of orgs have spent a lot of time and effort and made key decisions on certain technologies and syntax and conventions and all sorts of stuff. And that matters. That matters a lot. And so what you don't want to do is be just general, hey, ChatGPT, go and generate me a badge component, and it will do that for you. But it's not tuned to your organization's conventions and needs and stuff like that. So that's what we've been working on a lot, is this stuff is privately trained on your conventions. And once that's in place, you effectively have this component generation machine that can splat out whatever you want. And if you're using TypeScript, guess what? That's going to be using TypeScript. If you have a certain global prefix on all of your classes and stuff like that, it will follow that and so on and so forth. And you can wire it up and reference a Figma file and stuff like that. And you can run it through another process that basically runs it through. Here's the visual output and we want the sort of CSS to match and stuff like that. So it's pretty great. And the results are, it's you got a good solid 80% done in a couple of seconds, which is pretty powerful. So I don't think that, I think to be clear, it's 80% is better than 0%, but it's also not 100%, right? I think that is important to stress, that there's still a lot of human involvement needs to be to make sure that kind of what's coming out the other end is sound and good and accessible and semantic and behaves properly and all that good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like most devs, anyone that's like doing any kind of real, like pragmatic interfacing with LLMs, like is pretty aware of this right now. Like we have a pretty good grasp on this is pretty good at the whatever, 80%, but I've got a proof and do all that. I feel like the more interesting discussion here is on the first thing you said, where the line is drawn on, is training a necessary step here, like for a given code base, or could this all be within the context of a given prompt? Could we just prompt a model like with a given design system, like with some examples from that system and have it output code? Do you think that the front end space is unique enough still where like the semantics of how a given design system is implemented are still like, it's still necessary that is trained into a model versus just being able to prompt it at the surface? Because for conventional languages, if I'm just writing like JavaScript backend code, I can prompt without needing a model specifically trained to my code base and like give it, here's the APIs and my functions. Like I can get pretty close. Why do you think that's not the case for like front end components?
Yeah, again, I think a lot of it just comes down to when you're looking at a design system library, you want the conventions that are contained within that library to be consistent, right? So if you were to, again, just general purpose AI or whatever, just say, make me a badge and now make me a button and now make me an accordion, they might come out three different ways, right? So you want to, I think, preserve the integrity of the kind of code quality, and you want that sort of same shape, much like in the spirit of what comes out the other end of a design system. We're trying to promote consistency and cohesion that creates for a better user experience, right? A better developer experience is, oh, this particular language is used consistently throughout the code base. This namespace or this whatever is being applied consistently. So that's, I think, like where that comes from. And as for the means by which that's arrived at, whether it's just prompt engineering or you're actually training it on stuff, it's kind of irrelevant, but you can get pretty far down the line with some prompts and stuff. But as time goes on, what we're seeing, because you can train the code base not just on the code itself, which is helpful, but also on things like, here's our accessibility guidelines and here's our other brand standards and other important guidelines within an organization that basically helps provide context for why the code ought to be a certain way or things that it needs to consider that might not be totally obvious just from the code itself.
Yeah, I feel like this is another kind of manifestation of something I find myself talking about with guests frequently, and just like this kind of lack of ubiquity in the front end still. Like it's easy for an LLM to stumble into the convention of like how whatever modern Python is written. But I think that's a lot more tricky for the front end because we just like don't have as consistent of standards yet, like for linters and everything. So I think that this is like a particularly interesting kind of problem to be thinking about and considering a little bit. Do you think we'd ever get to a point where it's like possible to get all of that context paged in a clever prompt, or do you think it'll always be like it'll need to be done at the training step?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I think like the specifics of like how the solutions are arrived at or whatever works, honestly, and maybe, but I do agree with you that the front end world is lacking particular sort of standards on things. And that's an area that I've been diving into. I've been talking about this idea of a global design system and how a bunch of organizations are recreating the wheel with the same accordion component, the same text field component, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they're all implemented the same, but different. So yeah, so perhaps we will get consensus across the board one day, or maybe we won't. And I don't know, but it does definitely add some extra wrinkles into the equation versus backend language for sure.
Do you ever find, just as you work on these things and you're iterating, like, do the quirks of a design system that's been set up for a given organization, does that ever butt up against something that a model may be pulling in from the general internet, or like kind of looser standards that have been established on the front end, like accessibility things or stuff that maybe have changed in the recent years, and that is consistent or is tricky maybe to try to prompt around or get a model to stop spitting back at you?
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting lens. Is like, well, kind of what's general guidance for a lot of these user interface components? And a lot of these user interface components are pretty general purpose, right? So here's a modal, and here is an accordion, and here are tabs, and here's this, that, and the other, right? And there's some pretty blanket best practices and general sort of guidance around these things, right? You don't want to litter a bunch of tooltips all over a page, right, for no good reason, and so on. But I think that in this kind of holds true for both AI, but also this idea of a global design system, is it's just, man, wouldn't it be great to say, here's the stuff that's pretty settled and totally uncontroversial. Let's capture that so that teams, individual teams, could focus more on how do we at this organization wield modals, right? Given our specific audience, right? We cater to whatever, seniors or something like that. And so giving more thought to that context or audience or user specific stuff versus just here's a modal, here's the description of what it is. And whenever you hit escape and it closes, it's like those things are universal. How do we differentiate and free teams up to be able to focus more on the sort of specific language? And that's where, back to AI, that's where it's an interesting thing to weave in other documents that aren't just, here's the code base, now make more code, but it's, here's this code base plus all of this contextual information about who our audience is, who our users are. And what you can do is have the LLMs kind of generate guidance and stuff based on that context, right? So you do get more sort of user context specific documentation, for instance.
Do you think by virtue of starting to incorporate this stuff, we'll get to a point where some of these, we do start to materialize around standards a little bit more, just because like people are so often prompting as a first step? I guess let's assume that like this kind of continues and this becomes a pattern that we see, because like you said, 80% of the work's getting done out of the gate. Like, it seems like a natural step. Do you think we inherently get to more global convention just by virtue of this kind of everything going through models that have been trained on data sets, for better or worse?
Yeah, it could be. I think it's probably a combination of these tools kind of accelerating existing conventions, I think. But I think what we've seen over the last decade is, in a lot of cases, a convergence around certain user interface patterns that have proven themselves to stand the test of time, right? The marquee tag fell out of favor and the blink tag fell out of favor, but certain conventions like cards and badges and things like that, it's like, these are around. They're probably going to continue to be around, even if the aesthetic part of it changes with the seasons. The sort of semantic or the sort of concept of it is going to remain.
That kind of feels like that was even happening a little bit before all of this, probably.
Totally, yeah. But you're right. It's like that AI, and this holds true with AI writ large, is what this stuff is being trained on. It perpetuates.
Yeah, right.
What that was in, and yeah, so you have garbage in, garbage out kind of situations, and that's why so much of this. I think that's so much of what this entire exercise, this whole disruption is showing pretty clearly, is that it's like we need to change our jobs to exercise our human judgment and know when to trust the output of this stuff. But really, I think a healthy dose of skepticism of just holding these things at arm's length a little bit is, I think, really important at this moment, but also moving forward, just because it's, yeah, they can be helpful tools, but we liken them to this. It's like having a junior developer on your team. That is, it's like, ah, that's pretty good. It's shaped the right way, but a lot of times it's just missing that nuance, or it's missing that whatever. It gets some things wrong. And so I think that's just a healthy way to think about this stuff. Is this is junior level work. This requires some rework. This requires some additional training, additional nudging and feedback in order to get this stuff right. But I do think that this, whether it's we're talking about baking in the past and calcifying that, and then sort of we have this machine that spits out a bunch of garbage, or if we're talking about just the quality control of it, it's like humans need to be at the other end of this stuff to receive it, to review it, to question it, to push back on it, to edit it, to sculpt it. And my worry, and I would be surprised if you didn't share it, is that there's just it's so expedient that it's just, oh, here's Copilot, here's it's doing its thing, and then you launch, and then that's that. And it's, boom, you're done. In a culture where we're prioritizing shipping above all else and stuff like that, then that's what people are going to do without the due diligence, and bad things can happen.
Yeah, exactly. I'm forgetting. I think it was on one of our panel episodes. We were talking about AI generated code bases and all this stuff. And my observation there was like, I would hate, at least right now, as it stands, like I would hate to step into and have to do any kind of like maintenance or new feature work or refactoring on any like huge code base that was just like completely hands-off AI generated. And as long as it technically meets all the functional requirements, it's okay. I can't even, it's nightmare fuel. I don't even want to think about that. But I guess there is an interesting point here in that I think we can also use these tools, like repeated prompting is being used in many paradigms. Like we're taking the output and like feeding it back in. Okay, now proofread this again, now edit this. Can we do that with some of the work that we're doing for like component design and this kind of thing we're talking about?
Yeah, 100%. And that's what we've been standing up at Big Medium is it's like, again, here's effectively like a YAML file, right? This is what we're getting towards is this. Here's a YAML file that has the requirements of what this is. Here's a link to a Figma, the Figma file. Here's a link to these other things. It's trained on all of the context like we were talking about earlier. And then it's given that, go and do this. And so one thing generates the code, and then it gets passed off to the accessibility review agent, and then it gets passed off to the visual regression test kind of agent, and out the other end comes the final product. But it's gone through these sort of discrete agents that are handling different parts of the puzzle. And I think that's a good thing, so you're not just putting all your eggs in one basket. And especially whenever you start thinking about things like testing and like how does it, is what's coming out the other end sound, right? Does the accordion open when you click on it? Does it close whenever you click on it again and stuff like that? So there are different facets to this in order to create a sound product. There's the generation part of it, but then there's checking against other things to make sure that what's coming out the other end is sound. And that's good. Also doesn't, again, remove the human component of it, but it does beef up what these things are capable of.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's an interesting thing to consider. Like I haven't done much of this on like front end code, but on back end code I've been working on, that temptation is still absolutely there. Like we were talking about easier, like it's easy to just be like, here's a function, write unit tests, like test all these things. And then you're missing out, or it feels, then you're missing out on a lot of the utility that you get by writing tests. Like the reason we go through this process of checking the assumptions that we have as developers and like ensuring that things do what they do. How do you avoid that? Like in this context, like for design, like for components?
Yeah, and maybe it is a bit different on the back end, but this unit tests, so much of it is, it's just like, does this render? Does this look right? That's like whenever you pass in this prop, does it spit out the string? And it's so feels like it's a maybe a little safer on the front end, perhaps. But it's, yeah, you do lose something there, I think. But you also, I think you gain more than you lose. But at the same time, just keeping that kind of, let's say 80% is like, yeah, sure, it will generate some unit tests. And then you give it a pass and you have to put on your editing and critical thinking kind of human brain hat in order to check this stuff. But I'll tell you what, I like not having to write unit tests from scratch each and every time. At all the teams we work with, that's one of the most common kind of just gaps we see, is people don't like writing unit tests. So it does seem like that's fertile territory for AI to at least step in to give us a leg up on it, even if it doesn't get us 100% of the way there.
Yeah, nice, nice. I haven't seen instances of this in the wild, but unit tests make me think of it in that they're typically code that is like highly repetitive, in that the abstractions that we tend to lean for as developers oftentimes to get things that are repeated, set them aside and do those procedurally. Often, I think we're a little bit more willing in tests to be like, these are highly like repeated, but that's okay because we're like setting up context and we want this to be a little bit more, to feel a little more declarative maybe per test, and we're okay with that. But I think that there is still a balancing act there where eventually it's like, there's too much repetition of this piece. Let's like break this out into, even within the context of tests, let's write a helper to make it easier for us to write these tests. Do you think we lose any of that, or is there a fear or a concern that we like will maybe lose some of that and be willing to just be like, repeat everything everywhere a million times, even if we would have maybe been at the point where we would have abstracted this before. Is there any issue there? And like, the concern that I could see is, if we ever want to upgrade something or refactor, this is going to be like a lot more little code changes that we want to bump something's version, or there's a version bump in something that we're relying on as a dependency. Do you think that's something we need to be concerned with as we're writing this like more verbose kind of front end testing code?
Yeah, I think so. I think that you're seeing it just gets easier to just make a new one. And so we're just going to plant 1,000 flowers. And I think there's absolutely a real risk of making a giant mess that's all totally disconnected. There's a very popular like component generator tool that's out there right now that is like a CLI, and it's just like, make me a thing. And it will go ahead and make that, but it's not an NPM package. It's not a whatever. It just gives you the thing. And it, just like asking ChatGPT, make me the badge component. Cool. Copy and paste it into my code base. And that's that. And yeah, there's absolutely a lot of risk that we're just going to make a huge freaking mess, and that things won't be abstracted anymore in like a thoughtful or coherent way. And we'll just have a bunch of like stuff that's duct taped together. And then ironically, I think that we'll be leaning on AI to try to clean that shit up. So we're going to be using it to make the mess. And then we're also going to be using it to try to clean up the mess. And I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah. I'm not sure either. And yeah, it's this weird thing where I feel like as devs we realize a lot of the time that like, it's often harder to like edit code or review code that you didn't write than it even is to write it yourself. Like I often find it takes me longer to review a PR that I feel like is about the same kind of cyclomatic complexity as like something that I would have written just to page that in. So I do wonder if there'll be some kind of burnout on devs that are well-intended, that are just like, okay, I'm not going to shy away from using tools to generate code, but then I'm going to do this thing that we're talking about, of like, review everything and make sure it's doing what I want. And I've even felt this a little bit myself, where I write a piece of it and like I'll review it and I'm like, okay, I think this makes sense and it does what I want, but then I'll go back and look at it later and I'm just like, I didn't write this code. So I like am feeling that same kind of mental strain every time I go look at it. It's like, man, I wish I'd just written this.
It's interesting. And I think you're speaking from an interesting context too, of somebody that's, I'm just going to assume, very senior, and you've been doing this for a long time. And so this is a warp to how your brain has been trained. And I can't help but think of the crop of developers emerging in this landscape that are just like, oh, this is just going to be the water that they are swimming in. But I do think, again, that it's risky. I'm trying to think of a good analogy, but it's like whatever people that lament not having manual transmissions in cars anymore or something like that. It's like, oh yeah, like you should know how to do this. And it's, but do you? Like it's automatic. It just does its thing. Is there something lost in that? I think in this particular case, though, it's, I do think we have to be very cautious and we have to consider that web devs, like, where are they getting their skills? How do they know how to discern good from bad? Or, and as time goes on, as AI can write our whatever college admission papers and things like that, like, how do we know that the person can actually write, does actually know this stuff, does actually have critical thinking skills to discern good from bad and stuff like that? Or are they just very skilled at using these tools, which may or may not get things right? And it's, and it, and it, so it is, it, it all comes back to that sort of human judgment, that critical thinking skills, that understanding of, I think, fundamentals. And so I think that what I'd love to see from like a development education perspective is more of that, because a lot of the how, the specific syntax and the specific just kind of all of that stuff is going to be increasingly handled by the robots, right? So how do we free up our energy to focus more on the discernment between right and wrong or good and bad?
Yeah, yeah. This is going to segue into a couple of the things I wanted to touch on here as we get closer to wrapping up. Is this like what I like you? How do you approach this as an organization? Like you have a good perspective here, and like you're coming into these orgs and trying to like consult them and guide them, like. How do you guide them on this front? Like on this thing we're talking about right now is like, where is that line? How much are we willing to just kind of let the AI do its thing there? And this is okay time for us to be saving versus this is something we need to put human energy into still.
Yeah. So, you know, a client right now, so we're working with, and like, how should we be thinking about this stuff? How should we be incorporating these tools into our workflows? What areas of pain can this stuff help with? And so some of the conversations we've been having have been back to unit tests. Some of the devs are just super lazy. We're trying to push stuff through. They're not writing the right amount of unit tests and stuff like that. We've had some accessibility issues that have bubbled up. We do have some duplication. We have some unevenness in our API design. People are using different words for the same thing. Some people with a lack of familiarity with web components, for instance, are coming from different backgrounds, different frameworks and things like that. So there's a couple just in that, just a couple of conversations. Okay, here are some areas where I can maybe step in and help fill in that unit testing sort of gap. And again, not going to get you 100% of the way there, but it at least becomes less of a total impediment to getting things at least started.
It's better than nothing, right? Like it's something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also it's just much like the kind of blank page sort of paralysis that happens for writers and stuff. It's just, here's this thing. It's going to give you this sort of 80% head start, but you need to bring it home. There's really not a lot of excuses left to not have this stuff in place. So all to say is we're helping. And that's, again, more in like the code world. There's other areas that I think are really important to bring up too. One is like you have, especially in the context of a design system, you have a lot of different audiences for it. You have sort of more UX-based designers, visual designers, you have product owners and business analysts kind of people. You have developers, more front-end developers, more back-end developers. And a design system is this kind of beautiful watering hole for all of these things, but everyone's coming at it from their own perspective. And one of the really interesting things that we've been doing is creating these almost kind of personas for it. It's like, hey, explain this thing to me like I'm a junior designer, because I am, right? And you just started at your job, you're fresh out of school, and to have that sort of translated to you in a way that you could understand it versus, say, a senior designer or a senior front-end developer versus a junior front-end developer is really cool. And you dial up the technical knob if you're more senior and more development-minded versus design-minded. So that's a really cool area. It's just like totally contextualized documentation that helps get people what they need in to deliver it in a way that they could understand. So that's really cool.
Yeah. Have you found that works pretty well? Like the documentation side?
You know, if you've ever played just even with like ChatGPT, it's like, you know, write this in the style of Charles Dickens and it's going to spit out a lot of words. So it's pretty good. It's pretty good at that kind of stuff, right?
Just yeah. The quality of the prose might not quite come through. In tech docs, I don't know if we need that quality of prose. Yeah, that's okay. Yeah.
But the whole explain it to me like I'm five, right? It's pretty powerful in that respect and does a good enough job, especially for the stuff that is generally like a known quantity, right? Like
for sure.
Yeah.
How about just more at the organizational level? You mentioned like hiring before and the tricky stuff there. Are you guys like consulting on that at all? What skills should these companies be hiring for that are like want to keep their design system updated, but they're forward facing and want to be looking at all this stuff? How do you like balance that human designers that are good at things versus prompt engineers that are good at prompting?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's stuff that we're serving that role a little bit right now as like consultants and outside partners, is just helping teams understand what they have and what they should be looking for. And what we're working with them is doing a lot of the, we're going to help you establish like your technical foundations, right? We're going to give you like, here's the brain, and then we'll leave you with that. So you need like a brain maintainer. So it's that's certainly part of it. We're getting into that stuff now with our clients. But yeah, but I think it does touch pretty much anyone, not just from a hiring perspective, but just from practitioners who are working today. Mm-hmm. So if you're a designer, it's like, how does this impact you? How are you thinking about it? How might you incorporate this into your workflow? If you're a front-end developer, same thing. Right. Just really across the board, I think it's a good idea to be exploring this stuff, be kicking the tires about it, but also, again, being skeptical and rightfully so on how to wield these things. Right. I think that it's exciting and scary at the same time.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, I feel like I keep thinking back to that like automatic manual transmission analogy you made. And it does feel interesting. But I'm almost like sitting here chewing on, it feels to me more like the automatic manual transmission, like ensuring that whatever the person you're hiring can actually do the design work versus just prompting is maybe not like, is maybe more putting the car in like autopilot. Can you still get the car there if you were letting to have an AI drive itself versus like someone that's really good at using their tools and is doing something a little bit at a slightly higher level because they've automated some of it. So it's just like we're seeing in that field. Just like, as an organization, what degree of vehicle driving autonomy are you looking for in the people that you hire? It's just, I don't think we've figured out yet, but it's just like, it's such a tough
question. It depends on who you ask too, because I'm sure that the suits would want full automation. Just like that. And I've had a few conversations with people who are really AI or not, they're just exploring. It's like, oh, here's this end-to-end automated process where a designer will design something just so and stand on its head in just the right way. And that will set off this cascade and automatically build components that go into our CMS and come out the other end. And it's like,
we see it in these companies, right? Like raising venture. But it's like, yeah, we saw your guys' one good test case out of your 3,000 where you prompted and you finally got it to go through. Right?
I think like a helpful way of thinking about it is, you know, for certain tasks. I think that there's kind of stuff that's what we've largely been talking about is like kind of efficiency and speed and like the stuff that we already do, we could use these tools to make it go faster and stuff, which it feels good. That feels healthy, like, again, fertile ground to cover. And then there's like this whole other world that is just, we could do brand new things that we were never able to do before. And that's like a whole different thing. But in the spirit of design systems, so much of why we're working with design systems is to make higher quality things and free up those efficiencies so that everyone's not reinventing the wheel. So that dovetails quite nicely into the kind of what we can do with AI.
Is there anything particular kind of on the horizon as a closing thought, like that you're looking forward to, or you think will be kind of a, I don't know, like a milestone that would make this journey on the front end a little bit more balanced, or like will impact this pretty substantially in a productive way?
How AI will impact front end?
Yeah, specifically like in the on the design system front.
Yeah. It's a hard one. I think what I'd like to see, AI or not, is just people being freed up to work on things that are less rote. Just again, a badge is a badge. And we work with a lot of teams they have all of these kind of other tasks that are really important, the really important tasks that will make their work at the organization successful, but they're not doing those things because they're head down building the badge. So I think that what I would love to see is for the stuff that is settled science, that is shared, that is that can be automated safely. And here's this stuff. Yeah, again, snap your fingers and get these components out of the can to be able to free up people's potential, right? Their heads and their hands to work on more interesting problems than rebuilding a date picker again. So I think that's the future that I would love to see, is a little of this stuff being a bit more automatic to get the sort of basics in place. It's becoming a commodity in general, I think, but this automation is only making that come sooner, I think. So I welcome that, but I'd say that my worries far outweigh my excitements about it.
So. That's all right. If there's anyone else in this or they're intrigued, they don't really know where to start or start bringing AI into their current pipeline, what would you recommend they go check out and read any resources?
Yeah, that's a good question. I asked Kevin the same, because like he comes to me with this, my colleague Kevin Coyle, is I've stood all of this up. I'm like, what have you been reading? He's like, I've really just been going like to the models themselves and reading the manual, kind of pulling it down and kicking the tires, just getting a local environment stood up. I'd say that whole piece, which I admittedly haven't done myself, but again, my colleagues have, I think that's like kind of a good way to just get started, is like having it local on your machine and start tinkering with it and just kicking the tires. And then from there, picking a couple use cases and putting it through its paces.
Nice. Cool. We'll leave that for the tinkerers out there. Thank you for coming on and chatting with me, Brett. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me.